And I think it's, you know, it's something that we all love to hate, and that's banking. You know, and I've told you before, because you know, the bank earnings come out and they're monstrous, right? Absolutely enormous. And everybody goes, holy cow, why am I paying $4 to use an Interact machine to get my own money out of the bank when they're reporting multi-billion dollar surpluses? And this financial guy that I used to interview on, well, he would give us the markets update every day. He'd say, it's easy, Shay, just buy shares in the banks. Just do that. And at least that way, you know, you're making a couple of bucks off of this too. But we all love to complain about the banks, right? And for good reason. It's a necessary evil, though. That's the problem when it comes to banks. Chances are, in this country, you listening right now, deal with one of six banks, the big six. You know who they are, right? Bank of Montreal, Royal Bank, TD. There's six of them. Six of the big, big, big ones. In fact, in Canada, 93% of all banking is done through those six. And that hasn't changed in years. They have dominated the marketplace and held the lion's share of all commerce. And it's been that way for a long, long time, despite the fact there are others that try without much success. So what does that mean for us as customers and as for people just trying to, you know, navigate our way through the system? The fact that these six have a stranglehold on all that happens. We're going to chat with Moshe Lander now, an economist, a senior economics lecturer at Concordia University. Moshe, thanks for joining us. Always nice to chat.
Hello.
So with almost all of the banking activity in this country confined to those six big banks, the obvious issue is, in terms of competition, all this, it means more cost for us, right? I mean, they have more ability to determine the cost structure and all the rest of that stuff. It ends up costing us more, doesn't it?
Yes and no. So let me give you a nice economic hedge.
Okay.
So, yeah, it could be costing more, but I could also make the argument that banks have huge upfront fixed costs. And so the more customers that they have, the more they can spread those fixed costs over a large consumer base. And so that could actually lower the average cost of delivery, which means that we might actually be benefiting from oversized banks and a lack of competition. So there is this fundamental trade-off that on the one hand, competition should bring lower prices, but banking is a weird industry that it does have those big fixed costs. If nothing else, all of those big Roman columns to show security, the big high rises that are attached to, you know, corporate offices, and of course the computer systems that are enormous with huge amounts of data, those cost billions of dollars up front before you even have one customer walk through the front door.
How have they managed to maintain? I mean, like we know there's ATB, there's Service Credit Union. There are others that are out there. I see commercials on TV all the time for banks I've never heard of. This one called EQ has really done a big buy during the playoffs. I don't know what that is. So we know there's other entities out there. How come they never managed to really take a big chunk out of that big six?
Yeah, the entry for some of these newer banks is a little bit lower because they don't necessarily have to spend on the bricks and mortar the way that the big six do. But the problem is that banks convey security. And so if you're going to take your life savings and you're going to stick it in some bank account, you just said it. I don't even know what this EQ thing is,
yeah,
right? So do you want to take your life savings and hand it over to something that could have just bought commercial time and runs off with your money, right? So I think there's kind of this reinforced security that comes from those big six have been around a long time. And so they trade on the fact that they are comfortable. I said Roman columns a few minutes ago. That's not an accident, right? That conveys the idea
sure.
that your money is vault safe. And so that makes it really difficult for a new entrant to come in unless they already have some sort of name recognition. Let's say if one of the big American banks were to come in, we might be a little more open to that.
Right. If it's something we've heard of before, right, then it has that cachet with it. What's open banking? This was in the federal government's budget going back a few years now. I haven't implemented it yet. A lot of other countries have. What does open banking mean? What change does that bring?
So this would loosely mean that you could carry your information with you without having to go back to square one every time you want to set up with a different bank. So, even with your existing bank, if you go and open up a bank account, you have to start providing all kinds of information, right? Name, address,
yep.
ID, and information like that. And then from the same bank, if you ask for a mortgage, they start all over again as if you're a new customer. So what's your name? What's your address? What's your ID? And you would say, well, don't you already have that in the system? open banking is the idea that you can now share parts of, let's say, a profile with any bank and every bank that you want, and it kind of lowers the cost. So in a sense, it makes it easier for you to move your accounts more easily between the existing big six, but also any competitor that wants to come in. The analogy that I've been using with people is it's kind of like the idea of setting up a new cell account. It's much easier now than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because it's just a matter of popping in a new SIM card and you're off and running.
I get it. So, yeah, so like you say, like when you get a cell phone now, you can keep your phone number, you can move around, you can go to any provider, you can go to any kind of hardware that you want. You go attached to that number and to that profile. So it'd be the same thing with banking.
Yeah, and, you know, using that cell phone analogy for any of your listeners that are old enough to remember, right, that wasn't the way it was even like 10, 15 years ago, right? You had to completely start over from scratch with a new phone number, new everything. Now it's a lot easier. And so the idea is that where we were talking about a lack of competition within the banking sector, one of the ways in which they can hold you is by saying that if you want to go to a new bank, you can start all over again.
Yeah.
And so that raises the cost for you to switch. But by lowering switching costs, now the banks are going to be forced to be a little more competitive with trying to make sure that you do get that extra quarter of a percentage point in interest, or that your mortgage is an extra quarter of a percentage point lower, because they risk losing you to a competitor that can grab you a lot easier.
Now, other countries have done this, right? A lot of other countries have done this. They've already brought in these changes, some of them quite a while ago. So what's the holdup? Is it the big banks saying, you know, are they the ones trying to get in the way, or is it just the government dragging their feet? Do we know?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, it's one of those things that all you need is one horror story to create panic within the system.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that, like anything, when the government says that it's going to cost a certain amount of money, it's obviously going to cost triple or quadruple that amount. And when they say they're going to roll it out by a certain time, you can probably add on a decade to it. That's not a function of the Liberal government. That's anyone who would have been in power would have had a difficult time implementing these sorts of nationwide programs. But of course, the banks recognize that this is not meant to help them. It's meant to force them to compete more aggressively and to bring new entrants into the marketplace. And so they're going to lobby the government as well, trying to make sure that whatever legislation is introduced is as slow as possible.
Are there concerns, and I'm sure other countries have looked at it and have found ways to handle it, but what about safety, security, those sorts of things? Like that information, that profile, that's worth a lot.
It is. And so it kind of connects even to, say, social media, right? Like your name has value. And so when you're providing essentially your content for free and you're not monetizing it, it's the platform that's benefiting from it. And so your name, your content has value here too, and the bank is essentially using it for free. So there is the possibility here that, you know, there need to be very aggressive safeguards put in place to protect you. In some cases, it's to protect you from yourself. If, you know, with the new technology, it's not going to be as familiar to people with what they can and can't do with it. But again, this is one of those things that they should have already been factoring that into the legislation. There are countries that are well ahead of us in implementing this. And so you can use best practices to implement this and make it a little bit more comforting.
Yeah, exactly. And like we say, the system's already in place in a lot of other places. So what's the timeline? It was supposed to be early this year.
Yeah, like I said, you know, you can whatever any government says,
right,
I usually
yeah.
just add on 5 to 10 years to say, all right, let's expect it then. So we can probably talk in a couple of years and say, hey, how is this new thing going to work? I don't see what their advantage is to racing this out, especially in light of the fact that they already announced in their budget that their dental plan is already, I think, 3 times what they projected. They don't want to be seen to have another difficult time unrolling some sort of nationwide plan. So let's say in the new parliament, we would probably see that this can be rolled out for real.
Okay, well, we'll watch and see. Moshe, thanks so much for being here. As always, appreciate it.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.